the only thing that you can do is start interviewing people, start the podcast, start putting yourselves in situations where you feel so uncomfortable until one day you don't.
Hello, hello, Emily Abadi here. You are listening to episode 295 of Hurdle, a wellness-focused podcast where I talk to inspirational people about everything from their highest highs and toughest moments to essential tips on how to live a healthier, happier, more motivated life. We all go through our fair share of hurdles. My goal through these discussions is to empower you to better navigate yours and move with intention so that you can stride towards your own big potential and, of course, have some fun along the way. For episode 295, I am bringing you my lovely discussion with Camila Ramon. She is a Peloton instructor, and this combo has been so long in the making. I love it for so many reasons, but mostly because we have such a beautiful dialogue about embracing the body that we have and appreciating it for all that it can do, regardless of what it looks like, if your thighs touch, if there's jiggle, if there's wiggle, if you feel strong, if you don't feel strong, all of these things. There can still be so much appreciation for the body that we have. Camila gets so open and honest about her journey with embracing her body, complete with highs and lows, and shares a lot about the winding road that brought her to Peloton. She speaks on falling into the comparison trap, something that we can all relate to, and gives really beautiful advice for anyone at the beginning of a journey of their own. Make sure, if you're not yet doing so, you're following along with Hurdle over on social. It's over at Hurdle Podcast. I am over at Emily Abadi. And if you are here because you are a fan of all things Peloton, we've got a slew of other instructor episodes in the feed. I'll make sure to link a bunch of them in the show notes. With that, let's get to it. Let's get to hurdling. Today, I am sitting down with Camila Ramon. She is a Peloton instructor. How are you doing today, girl?
I'm fabulous. It's been a beautiful day already, so I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here, and I'm excited that this weather is finally kicking in here in New York. I'm like traveling so much right now, so to be able to come home and it is kind, I'm like, please stay this way.
It is 55 degrees and I feel like it's summertime right now. And for somebody that grew up in Miami, that's saying a lot. Like, I feel like I'm very quickly turning into a New Yorker and I could not be happier about the sun right now.
We love it. We absolutely love it. So I was doing some research before our chat today. I know that's always like a scary thing, but really the research was just into our messaging history. And you first messaged me in 2019, when you were living in Los Angeles, teaching at another spin studio that will not be named. And aside from the fact now that you're living in New York and you reach a much wider audience, what would you say is the biggest difference in your life now?
Honestly, I feel like I'm living a dream. All the things that I could have even imagine to be doing what in 2019 or when I DM'd you or messaged you, I'm currently doing. And that's really mind-blowing to me. The other day, I was actually looking at, like, you know, your phone always shows you like recaps of your year, like what I was doing, like, you know, like everyone else 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And I was like, wow, we have come a long way. And I have been listening to Hurdle since then. Okay.
One of the OG hurdlers, which is why it's literally so exciting to get you on here. Well, then I've got to ask you, in listening to the show, like, what has kept you coming back?
I just feel like you have such genuine conversation with people. And I think that the topics that you talk about, whether it be, you know, fitness related, mental health related, self-love related, they're all things that, you know, I am interested in or have struggled with or like insight and support on. And I love the layout of the podcast. So,
oh, wow. I mean, I wasn't trying to get you to compliment me right off the bat. But the sentiments are drastic.
It's easy if it's true.
Well, it's so appreciated. So, I mean, kicking it off on that note, really, then you said yourself having some struggles. I know you and I both speak a bit about body confidence. So I want to kick this off there and really begin our discussion on when you first realized that you were, let's say, aware of your body. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, I think I was always kind of aware of my body. I grew up in Miami, but I was born in Argentina and I would go back to Argentina for 2 months at a time. And every time that I would go back, I would always receive comments on my body. I would always compare my body to my cousin's body because my cousin's body looked very different from mine. I would hear remarks like from family members when I was leaner. And I guess I didn't really register it at the time, but that's when I was honestly like very aware of my body from a very young age. As a matter of fact, when I was in middle school, I joined the cross country team because I wanted to be flaca, like I wanted to be skinny. And then moving forward, you know, I ended up going into dance, which I loved as a form of self-expression. But naturally in the dance space, especially in Miami, you know, you stand in the mirror, you look at your body next to 32 other girls and you're like, why are my hips shaped this way and theirs aren't? Or like, why do I look this way and they don't? And continuing in that space, you know, I loved running for sure because it helped me with my anxiety. And I'm a person who suffers a lot from anxiety that I've learned to manage a little, like definitely a lot more now. But even with running, like I would do it just because I wanted to be skinnier or look a certain way rather than how I wanted to feel. And even later, like throughout my dance career, it was never really like positive in terms of my physicality. It was more so like that feeling of self-expression that I chased, and I stayed with, you know, I stayed in what I considered to be a toxic community for a very long time because of how much I loved expressing myself in that way.
Within the dance community, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's understandable that you were chasing a feeling at home in your body or feeling comfortable. And it makes my heart sad that you leaned into running at that time anyway, as simply a tool for weight loss, which is definitely something that I can relate to because that's how I got started with running as well. And you didn't even just dabble in running. You mentioned cross country. I know you also have a couple of marathons under your belt. Mm-hmm. So what was that relationship like for you with running when you really did need to commit to a training plan and incorporate it very regularly into your life?
Yeah, I feel like I'm a very competitive person. So naturally, running turned very competitive for me very quickly. I think the reasons why I started running were because I wanted to look a certain way. But once I discovered all of the things that were happening to me, for me, in my brain, I was like, oh, this is wild and I need to do this for the rest of my life. I guess when I was in high school, I would have like panic attacks and more so like anxiety attacks, I guess. And running would always help me like figure out my brain and my thoughts and be like, chill girl, like it's really, you're freaking out about things that you should not be freaking out about right now. And it really like the when I fell in love with running was in high school when I was running competitively. I didn't have to run. Everything in my like high school days said I shouldn't be running. As a matter of fact, like my dance teacher demoted me from being like an officer in the dance team because I was not allowed to be a part of another club, but I had like qualified to states. And then I requested a meeting with the assistant principal and I was like, you need to let me run and dance because if not, I will die. Okay. And I always put a lot of pressure on myself, which is also where like, you know, the anxiety stems from as well. But running was a place for me when I was feeling like there were so many things that I couldn't control. There was like that one place where I felt like I was at home, where my thoughts started to make sense for me, where I could run through feelings, where I could run through emotions. And then as an adult, the same thing happened. I think there was a time in my life, which we can get into, where I did have a negative relationship with running when I started to train again after taking a break from movement. But other than that, it has been a very like positive experience for me because I tend to run on my own terms.
Okay, so let's do that. Let's talk about the time when you leaned out of fitness and then leaned back in. That is something, I don't know about you, but so many messages about getting back on the horse, starting again. How do I meet myself without judgment? Tell us a little bit about your experience to start us off. And then I'd love to kind of circle back on some themes there.
Yeah. So I made the decision to, I thought I wanted to dance professionally like my whole life. And I made the decision to opt out of dancing professionally because I had negative experiences in the industry that were very like aesthetic based. Naturally, you know, it is the entertainment industry, but I realized that, you know, people were treating me differently when I looked a certain way. And in hindsight, now that I reflect on that, that was really happening more often than not. Like when I was leaner, they would be nicer to me. They would put me in the front. They would talk to me more. When I wasn't, I was just like, you know, like a girl on the side in the back, you know? And my talent didn't necessarily change. It was more so like my physicality, which was extremely frustrating for me, and amongst other things. So I decided I did not want to dance professionally. And I graduated from college. So I got a big girl job and I was working in an international public relations firm representing global businesses throughout Latin America and the Caribbean. And I really dove like headfirst into that because I love working with the Latina community. And I was just learning as much as possible, you know, practicing writing in Spanish because I was born in Argentina, but you know, you forget, like I don't write like officially or professionally in Spanish every day. So it was a really, really fun time until it wasn't because I was like working so much and I was like, I'm at a desk job. I'm a girl that likes to move. Like I love moving my body. And I realized that for the 3 years that I had been working there, I like completely stopped training. Like I wasn't weightlifting. I wasn't really running anymore. And I also weightlifted like after high school and got into like a kind of like bodybuilding stint. But when I got back into training or when I was like, okay, girl, like you need to start moving again for your mental health so that you can feel good, I started running and I was speaking to myself from like such a negative place. Like I was like, if you can't make it to the gym, like you're a piece of shit. Like you want to look a certain way. So you have to do this, this, and this. And I would be like on a run. And this is something that I say every single interview, but essentially the moment where I realized that something was really wrong with me and that something that had once been so positive for me had become so detrimental to my mental health was after I had finished like a 5 to 6 mile run. I don't remember the exact distance. In Miami, after work, I was running the Key Biscayne Bridge, which is a huge bridge. It's very hard to run over. I had run it over it once already. I was coming on my way back. On my way back, I was speaking so negatively to myself, like, you're not enough. Like, why can't you achieve these simple things that you want to achieve? I got to the top. I like broke down crying. And it was like such a beautiful day. Like, boats were in the water. There could have been dolphins jumping out the water as well. And then I was there like being so miserable after my body had just done something so special for me, running 5 miles, 6 miles. So at that moment where I was just like sitting there in my frustration, I made the decision to like change that relationship that I had with movement because it was something that, particularly running, like I told you, was something that had brought me so much joy for so long and so much clarity. And now it was hurting me. It was making me feel bad mentally. So I removed all expectations. I decided I'm just going to have fun and I'm actually not going to run for a while until I feel like I'm okay to do so and speak positively to myself while doing so. So I just called up a friend and I was like, hey, can you just like do this with me? I really just want to walk every day after work for 30 minutes and we can just like talk shit or like chismosear, like you spill the tea, I spill the tea. It's a vibe. So I just went walking with a friend for like, it was honestly probably like several weeks that we were just walking and talking about things that were interesting about, you know, chisme, the tea. And it was so fun for me. And then once I started like incorporating consistency into my lifestyle, like consistency with movement, I started incorporating, you know, different goals. I said, okay, well, now that I've been walking and I feel good, like I want to start taking dance classes again. I want to go to Pilates. I want to go to bar classes. I want to start lifting weights again. And then I started running again, but running was more so to feel good. And I started to realize that I started developing once again a positive relationship to movement, to running, to the exercise that I was doing. And then as I started to feel better, I started to incorporate, you know, mileage and more performance-based goals. And all of my goals were performance-based. None of them were aesthetic. And I hit that like aha moment where I was like, I feel really amazing right now. And that's when I realized and I made the decision that A, I wanted to teach fitness full time, and that's what I wanted to do as a career. And B, that I wanted to be that point person, inspiration, I guess, or coach for Latinas that I did not have growing up. Because as a Latina in the space, there are very few people, and particularly during that time, that were speaking about exercise to feel a certain way mentally and physically rather than look a certain way, for sure.
Yeah. Thanks so much for sharing all of that. It's understandable that you were a product of your environment, right? You weren't raised somewhere that spoke about movement as a tool to manage or deal with mental health or to feel good. It was only about those aesthetics. So you had to carve out that path for yourself. So interesting, the perspective that you had almost from the get-go after this large hurdle moment that you wanted to lean into movement to feel better in your body. How did it go from, I want this, to, no, I'm going to do this? Because I think that turning point, that tipping point, is where a lot of people get stuck. It's like, yes, like I want to feel better in my body. Yes, I want to move more. But you really made it happen.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, for me, I was just like so fed up with myself. Honestly, it kind of came from a place of despair because I said, I am tired of feeling this way. I want to have a good experience in my life and in my body. And I thought to myself, I said, how long will I have to wait until I start to feel happy in my body? Like, when am I going to make the decision to say, hey, girl, like, you can have fun? Because looking back at my life, I have realized, and I realized even back then too, like it absolutely had nothing to do with how skinny or how muscular or how ripped or XYZ I felt during that time. Because when I was at my leanest, I was at my unhappiest. When I was like doing all of these things that, you know, bodybuilders in Miami were doing at that time, because that was kind of the trend in fitness, I felt my worst. I felt my weakest. I felt mentally unstable. I was not well. I did not have good relationships. So for me, you know, I had already had all of that experience of being unhappy in so many different spaces in my life. And also seeing other people feel confident in their bodies really made me think, like, I want that to be me. Why can't it be me? It's my turn to feel good. Like, this is so messed up that this, my entire life, I have been fed this narrative of how I'm supposed to feel insecure in my body and in this space, and how people react to my body when it looks a certain way. Why don't I get to dictate that storyline for myself and choose the narratives that I choose to entertain? And it led me there. And I think one of the most important things, because people always ask me, like, what's like some of the things that you did to like feel good in your body, I guess. And one was really curating my social media feed, particularly at that time, unfollowing anybody who made me feel a certain way. And I know that it wasn't their fault. You know, it has nothing to do with them. It has to do with me. And two, for me, it was looking at myself in the mirror after a tough workout and thinking, you know, my little pancita, which is like means like little belly, like I love you, girl. Like, we're in this together. You're a part of me. You're so beautiful. My legs, my lungs, my heart. And I get emotional, you know, talking about it, because I remember, like, and I can put myself there in those moments in my life where like little Camila was so upset with herself, and then picture like how I feel now and how I felt throughout the process and the emotions that I went through. And that like last time that I looked at myself and I looked at my stomach and I looked at my body and I looked at my hips and I said, I love you. And I remember actually meaning it.
Yeah.
And it was so beautiful.
It's so beautiful. And you have such a beautiful heart to share all of this and to be vulnerable. I think this vulnerability and this honesty is what empowers other individuals to follow a similar path, right? One where they can understand that it's possible to love yourself. You might not wake up every day and be like, man, I look good, but you can wake up in the morning and be like, I have such a deep and beautiful appreciation for everything that my body empowers me and enables me to do.
Yeah, 100%. And that's also part of the conversation that we have all the time. It's like, you know, people ask me like, what do you do on the days where you like don't feel as confident? And I'm like, I have those days today. Like I wake up sometimes and I'm like, I don't feel confident. Like I have my period or I ate pizza. I just feel bloated, or it's just a day that I'm not, you know, doing my best. And I just, you know, I remind myself of who I am, what I'm here to do. And I think for me, it's more so like coming back to that simple storyline of thanking my body and looking at it and saying like, I love you. Like I have a right to feel good in you today, if I'm talking to myself in the mirror, and it helps me so much.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. It really does. Having love, not only in the good moments, but also in the turbulent ones as well. You also highlighted so many awesome things that you did throughout your journey that helped you along the way. Although in the moment, it might have felt small, but looking back, really big steps. Things like accountability, reaching out to your friend and saying something simple like, hey, I could really use your help with this. This is important to me. That step within itself can be so difficult for so many people. Also setting a realistic expectation. You were like, I'm going to walk every day. I'm not going to run 5 miles a day. I'm going to walk every day. So in that, starting slow, which is what I really loved that you highlighted there. Something you also mentioned is that as you felt more comfortable in your body from working through the physical stuff, you began to see payoffs in other areas of your life. Talk to me a little bit about that. Once you started moving more and getting more physically active, how did you see those endorphins play out in other aspects of your life?
Yeah, I think that for me, training has a lot to do with confidence. So when I feel like I achieve something physically, then it helps me to realize like I can do the same thing like mentally, you know, in a corporate environment or in any sort of feat I may be faced with in life. Confidence is huge. And it doesn't come from, you know, physical confidence or like aesthetic confidence. It comes from like mental and internal confidence. That was super big for me. In addition to that, setting boundaries with family members about things that I would and wouldn't tolerate. Like the work that I'm doing internally in my mind, I have so clear, and the way what I will accept and will not accept in my internal dialogue had become so clear that I could sense it as projections from other people when they were to be around me. And in that way, I could set boundaries with those loved ones, friends, or acquaintances as to like what it is that I will and will not tolerate, or remove myself from spaces that I know will make me feel worse or make me feel like I'm not aligned with what it is that I'm trying to do for myself.
Talk to me about that in execution, because that's another thing that some people are like, wow, I would love to set a boundary, but I don't want to hurt this person's feelings, or I don't want to like be the only person that doesn't do X. How does that work in practice so that you can be taking care of your mental health?
It depends on how close your loved ones are and what your relationship with that person might be. For me, I think it was very easy for the people that I have close by that love me to understand what my boundaries were, because they would say something and I'd be like, hey, you know, when you say this, it makes me feel this. And then a lot of times, particularly in the Latin space, women and people, but particularly women, have had this narrative ingrained in their culture and in their families for so long that it's very hard to get rid of something that is just, it's like in your body. Like it's just like a regurgitated thing that you've listened to your entire life. So for me, it was very healing to be able to remove the judgment of other people that maybe I hold in a high regard or I held in a high regard, and they would say things that were damaging to me, but being able to forgive them because I realized that it's not just their fault, but it's also like a cultural, generational thing that's been happening for so long. It made it much easier for me to grasp, you know, everything that was happening and deal with my thoughts and my emotions internally. In terms of other people, I think also silence goes a long way. If somebody tells me something that I don't agree with today and they expect for me to you know, agree with them back or say something and I disagree with them, particularly if it's something that relates to me and I don't know them well enough to be able to be like, hey, like, I do not like that you said that, even though I will still do that if I feel like I need to, I'll just stay quiet. And they get it more than you think.
It's so true, especially with people that you don't know. If we're going to like reference this to social media, you know, it's like, why am I going to give this person this negative energy if that's not what I want to receive in return, right? Energy attracts like energy. Boundaries in real life are basically just the opportunity to unfollow people, so to speak. So you have the opportunity to decide who you want to quote unquote unfollow in real life and then move forward as you please.
Exactly. And I think also if your loved ones are understanding, or like, let's say for example, like if I have a cousin and my cousin knows that this is how I feel about my life and this is my journey and this is the space that I'm going into, when I go to my cousin's family member's home, for example, or like my tia, whatever, and they hear something like that, like they're more likely to also step in a position where like they maybe feel more comfortable, or my husband, or you know, anybody, a friend. I think it's also like having your close circle close to you and being able to speak for you in places that they might feel comfortable with but would be uncomfortable for you is also a great strategy to, you know, implement for sure.
Taking a break from today's episode to talk to you about Bandit Running, today's sponsor. Bandit has quietly been putting together the most value-packed membership in running, all aimed at providing resources at every step of your running journey. They're adding partner benefits left and right, including 20% off all ASICS footwear and Therabody Reset, 15% off Citizen M Hotels and Auto Camp, which has 40 plus locations near starting lines around the globe, and so much more. Not to mention, you get a 10% standing discount on all of their amazing performance running apparel and accessories, free shipping on every Bandit order, a $50 digital gift card, and two pairs of member exclusive socks. Head on over to banditrunning.com. That's BANDITRUNNING.com. And use code HURDLER15 for 15% off the membership, making it just $100 for the entire year. So many perks at such a great value. Again, that code is HURDLER15 for 15% off the membership. And you can also use the code HURDLER15 for 15% off your first order at banditrunning.com now through April 16th.
You said that you then knew you wanted to go full time into teaching fitness, coaching fitness, specifically being a guiding light for other Latin women. What happens in practice? Where do you begin with that?
In Miami, there was another studio that taught cycling classes and bar classes. And coming from dance, I immediately said like, hey, I want to try bar. And it was, bar is so hard.
So hard.
It's so hard.
I'm like tired. My abs are quivering just thinking of bar.
I know. I'm shaking right now. I started training for bar and it was like such a long process. It was like 4 months that I was training for bar. And I didn't have the means to quit my job and just start a full-time fitness career with absolutely no income while I was just training. So I was training on the side, took definitely longer. I was working, you know, part-time as a contractor at the communications firm that I was working at. And I was about to like launch or like graduate from my bar training. And my husband, who was in the military at the time, he's like, we're getting stationed in LA. And I was like, yay, but oh my God, no, I have to start again. So then I moved to LA and the same like gym, they also had bar classes. And I was like, hey, I want to be a bar instructor. I want to be a bar instructor. I want to be a bar instructor. They're like, we have no availability. We're not looking for anybody. They were like, are you interested in auditioning for a cycling instructor position? And I was like, I've never taught cycling before, but I do like running and I like how I feel when I do cardiovascular exercise. So I feel like this would be great. Plus the beats. And I always took like spin classes at the local gym because I really loved it. So I was like, okay, let me audition. They're like, great, can you come tomorrow? I said, I don't know how to clip into a bike yet, ma'am. How am I supposed to teach? I was like, I have to first go take a class. So I went and I took a class. I sat in the back row. They came, they like set up my bike for me because it was all wrong. And I was like, oh my God, Gabena, how embarrassing. And then I went back and I auditioned. I auditioned to Mr. Bombastic. And this was like in Larchmont in LA. And they hired me somehow. And I started teaching cycling classes in LA, which was really incredible and really great.
How long was it from when you got hired to when you taught your first in-studio class?
Oh, I have no idea, girl.
You went through like their training program after you got hired?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I don't even remember how long it is though. It's several weeks.
I think it's important to like make sure that we establish that as the record and that it wasn't
because I was like, I don't know how to clip into a bike. I taught Mr. Bombastic. I was like doing isolations to Mr. Lova Lova. And then they were like, yeah, you're on tomorrow. I was like, damn, must be good. No, I trained for a couple of months. I learned quickly. Man. I do learn quickly though.
And in the learning, did you start to enjoy the cycling process more?
Oh, I loved it. Immediately from when I took my first class at the studio, I was like, I love this. And I knew I was going to love it. So I started teaching there and I started teaching more and I started teaching more and I loved it. But one thing about me is that I love reggaeton, and where I was teaching in the communities that were going to this gym, I was not receiving the same feedback that I was expecting to receive for the music. So I changed a lot of my music taste and I would play different music to accommodate for the community that I felt like I had to accommodate for there. And on the side, I was like, now that I'm establishing myself as a fitness figure here, let me see what I can do to build my community of Latinas and start having conversations in Spanish with these lovely ladies. So I started creating PDF programs of like strength workouts, because I also was like NASM certified by that point. I started doing personal training and I started creating these PDF workouts and I started growing my Spanish speaking community, even though I had a lot of friends in LA who did not speak Spanish who would do my programs anyway. And then when the gym closed, when the cycling studio closed, I started teaching, barbell, kettlebell, all that functional training. I got a lot of experience in that, which I also did growing up. Since high school, I lifted weights. And then I started developing my own app. So I worked really hard for about a year with a partner to develop an app in Spanish with like 5 12-week training programs with, community, with self-love components. It was something really special. And then we were about to launch that program or that project. And the person that I was working with at the time said that they no longer wanted to do it as a team, that they want to do it alone. And I was like, are you kidding me? And then I later found out that they kept a lot of, they kept all the code, because I was also naive in thinking, because this is a person that I knew. I was very naive in thinking that this person could, I could trust this person. So I didn't have anything in writing, which now, you learn, you live and you learn. And that's the lesson. And that's the lesson. Now people are like, you want to do something? I'm like, yes, sign this. Thank you so much. I would love to work together, but sign this. Thank you so much.
You, ahead of the curve here, answered my question, because that's such a big undertaking, right? Going through the process of developing and then creating the content for an app, aside from the fact that you now know to get someone to sign on the dotted line, what else would you say was one of the biggest takeaways from that process?
Well, the biggest takeaway is that keep going no matter what. Keep going no matter what. Because at that point, I was at a crossroads, because I lost all the code. The people were trying to steal, my videos and kind of animate over them, which is even more messed up. They had all my programming. But I was like, what makes me special is not my programming. It's me and the community. So I was at a place where I was like, I'm alone. There were some other really difficult things that were happening during that time with some family members. Right before the pandemic hit, I was like, should I continue to do this? Like, am I really going to devote an entire year of my life to not doing anything, to having all my friendships be sacrificed because I'm just looking down at code all day and like programming programs and linking videos to the exact movement and sitting on my couch and timing how long it takes to do 10 bicep curls or bicep curl to an overhead press for 12 to 24 week programs? And the answer was yes, because my mission is to help as many women as possible feel strong, feel powerful, and understand that there's so much more to movement than what we've been sold our whole lives. So I kept going. And obviously during the pandemic, we all went digital. So I obviously started to do a lot more like digital training, Instagram lives, all that good stuff. And the community began to grow. And then finally, October 5th of 2020, I launched my app, both for iOS and Android, which was like native code. And it was a huge undertaking. If you're not into app building, then you don't know what that means, but it's crazy.
Such a massive undertaking. And how did that feel for you?
Oh, it was amazing. It was like, it was so beautiful. And it was something that, like, you know, I created with so much love, and I saw the community begin to grow. And my husband was so supportive the entire time. But during the pandemic, we realized, we're like, hey, like, you know, we're really far from our family. We've been here for a while. We don't know like where you're going to get stationed next. And we realized like we wanted to be closer to family. And also we wanted to be geographically flexible. So we made the decision to get out of the military, and we moved back to Miami in February of 2021. And I have always loved Peloton, period. Like, I got a Peloton during the pandemic before I even became an instructor. But before then, I always knew what Peloton was doing. I was well aware of what was happening. And I was like, I wish my husband wasn't in the military so I could move to New York and become a Peloton instructor, as if it were that easy. And I was like, I wish. And then the more that I started like thinking about it, I was like, listen, I'm doing something so amazing, but it's, people aren't seeing it. And the girls, like, I need to reach the girls. The girls need to know about this. They don't know. Las mamis no saben. They need to know. We need to get the mamis on here. So February 25th, we moved back to Miami. And then like 2 weeks later on a Friday at 5 a.m, I wrote an email to Peloton. And I said, hey, I'm here. I have something really amazing that I'm doing, but you guys are absolutely incredible too. And like, I would die to be an instructor and scream from the rooftops to the Latina community about, you know, the importance of what it is that I'm doing. And I got an email the same day at like 9 a.m. And I was like, so confused. I ran to my living room and I screamed at the top of my lungs, my husband. He's like, what is happening? He's like, Peloton wrote back to me. And the rest is history, I guess.
The rest is history. What was the email? What was in the email back?
The email back was, well, I actually wrote an email to the CEO, and it was, the CEO forwarded my email to like the casting director, and the casting director was like, hey, you know, our CEO got your email. We would love to connect with you. Are you available?
You're like, I guess so.
Right. Like, I have to check my schedule. Yes.
And you had just made this major move back to Miami. So what a crazy, inspirational moment for you to be like, well, I'm just going to go for it. For people that have an idea like this, or have a thought or an aspiration, and they're on the cusp of sending the email, so to speak, what is your advice to get that done?
Send the email. Honestly, it's just do it. Like, because there were so many doors that were closed in my face and so many ideas that I had before I got to the place where I'm at, where somebody finally saw value in what I was doing and said yes. But the most important thing is that I saw value in myself and I saw value in what I was doing, and I never quit and I never gave up, even though people that I knew from like high school would unfollow me because I would post in Spanish, and it would make me like sad to see that people like weren't following me anymore. Or even though like people that I was training with at the time, you know, wanted to pay me pennies to teach individual classes and also asked me to organize events for free. And I was like, no, that's not what I'm valued at. And then they would close the door in my face. And I was like, okay. Or so many pitches that went like that people did not respond to before I finally got one that somebody responded to. And it's just about that. It's about, you know, like brick by brick, building the wall, like climbing the ladder step by step and taking, you know, the little stepping stones. Even when I think about it today, when I got my first job out of college, it was in international public relations. And I was like, this is very interesting. And I know that I'm going to use it in the future, but I know that this is not where I want to be. And taking things that you learn from different places and applying it towards your greater goal or your mission is what I personally feel like progress is all about.
Yeah. And having that growth mindset, right? Because it would have been super easy to get into that public relations situation and be like, this isn't what I want to do, and have some sort of frustration every day when you showed up and looked at it through a negative lens, but you chose to look at the positives and use those positives then to move forward. Again, this concept, you talk about it all the time on Hurdle, but energy attracts like energy, and you were very cognizant of how you wanted to frame your experiences to work for you rather than against you.
Yeah. And I think also something that I tend to do, and I think this is a lot to do with my parents, you know, like I'm an immigrant. I came here with my parents, and my parents have done nothing but work. But the one thing that they taught me is that when you want to do something, you just go little by little and you start. And that's something that I've always been able to, you know, take with me. Like, no matter what little idea that I have, like, I don't know, this is completely unrelated, but you want to be a pop star, like, have you taken singing lessons? You know?
No, it's entirely true, right? You can think big, but you've oftentimes, to get to that big goal, you've got to start small.
Right. Like, you want to be a Peloton instructor. Have you taught fitness classes in public? Do you have on-camera experience? Like, things like that. Like, that people, we forget. And for me, like, I didn't even realize that I had on-camera experience until I was like, hey, you know, I was a dancer. Like, I do have on-camera experience. It translates, you know? And I was like, yeah, like, I can do this. And with whatever, you know, goal we have in life, like, you know, like, start the podcast, because the only thing that you can do is start interviewing people, start the podcast, start putting yourselves in situations where you feel so uncomfortable until one day you don't. My Peloton audition, I thought I was going to pass out. I was going so hard. I was so nervous. When I stepped foot into the room for the first time, like my first like rehearsal, I was like shaking. I was so unwell. And now I go and I teach class, and I'm like, I live there. Like, it's my house, and I feel amazing. And I love welcoming people into that space, but like, everybody's scared to do things. Like, everybody's scared to do things, especially if you feel like you could look a fool. Like, and social media is crazy in that way. But for me, like, I have publicly embarrassed myself on the platform so many times, but I've learned to laugh at myself. Like, the only thing that you can do is have fun in your life. Like, what am I going to be worried about? Juan123 thinks about me online and not live my life.
How do you get to a place where you feel more accepting or capable of rolling with the punches?
For me, it's all about like levity. I realized like living in a place of lightness and not taking things so seriously. Obviously, there are things that we need to take seriously. Like, my job is extremely important. My family is extremely important. Like, I do not take that lightly, but the things within that space that I can take lightly, like, I do take lightly. Like, I say something, I mess up, I look a fool, my hair gets stuck in my eye, whatever it might be, I fall, I slip, or I do something like that I thought was going to come out cute on camera and I look crazy. Like, what else am I going to do? Live my entire life thinking about that moment? No, like, just move on. It's kind of like the same concept. Like, how long are you going to wait to feel good in the body that you have, in the space that you have? Like, why am I going to live my entire life being self-conscious of everything that I do when I could just live my life, period?
Yeah. Why not me? Why not now? For you, right, over the last 3 years since joining the Peloton family, what would you say has been one of your greatest, proudest moments thus far?
it's kind of hard for me to think about that, because my greatest, proudest moment was like bringing Spanish language to the bike. And like that first class was so impactful for me. Maybe I think one of the first or like second most impactful moment, rather than like my like being welcomed to the platform in this way and being so well received by the community, was like having people in the studio for the first time in Spanish and teaching Spanish language class on camera with Spanish speakers in the studio. The energy is insane in the best way. Like, it's just such a party, such a vibe, and such a beautiful space. And when I get messages from people that are telling me like, hey, you know, I've been taking your classes and I live, you know, in Germany, and I'm a Latina, and I feel so connected to my roots when I take your class. To me, that's like so special, because also I'm an immigrant, so I know what it feels like to miss your country and to miss your tierra and to miss your land. Also, like, let's not forget that one of my favorite artists came to the studio. His name is Fade, and I got to do a class with him, which is insane. T-Pain also came to the studio. If you haven't done my T-Pain and Fade rides, like, what are you waiting for? As a Miami girl, having T-Pain be in the studio and me perform with him was like highlight of my career. And then also just bringing Latin music to like, or like reggaeton and perreo to the forefront, and teaching classes in English and like throwing in reggaeton songs in there and connecting with Latin artists and just educating people on Latin music or introducing them to new artists is something that brings me so much joy.
I love how you are seamlessly letting your community know that you see them, but it doesn't need to be strictly Spanish speaking or Spanish influenced ride, right? Like, you can bring in your Latin heritage to everything that you do because it's quintessentially and ingrained in who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking, and my Miami too.
Yeah, of course. And so it's so fun to like see how radiant and excited you get about this opportunity, one that you're clearly grateful for every day. When you think about what excites you right now, what is it?
I'm excited to see more members in person. Like, I want, when I meet people outside, it makes me so happy to like hug people and be like, hey, oh my God, like, you do my classes. Oh my God, your abuela does my classes too. That's crazy. Tell your abuela I say hi. Like, I love when like people tell me their parents do my classes. I think also just like the Latin music is having a huge moment right now. And it has frequently, you know, but I feel like it has like a rise, and then maybe sometimes it's a little bit more hush or a rise. But I feel like this last bit of time where Latin music has really gotten a lot of recognition at a global scale is very exciting. And I have listened to Latin music my entire life. So seeing so many artists being recognized and then also playing their music and seeing people enjoy it so much genuinely, like even if they don't know the words, brings me so much joy. And also something that has been like exciting me recently. So I lived in LA for a couple of years, as we talked about, but I used to do a lot of like hiking, or like a couple times I did some trail running, and I feel like the mountains are calling me. So my cousin and I have been like committing to taking trips, and like every time we go somewhere in Argentina now, I'm like exploring my country a little bit more. So I take her on these like extreme hikes where she almost dies, but I make sure she doesn't. And that has been really exciting for me because I love like nature and training in that way too, and getting out there.
Getting back out there. I love to hear it. You talked so beautifully before about the journey that you've had to feel comfortable in your own body and appreciate your own body. Right now, if you were to look in the mirror, what is it that you see looking back at you?
I see a really strong woman who is out here in the world trying to make a change and stands for something that's really important. And I see an entire community that stands behind her. And I feel extremely blessed to be where I am and with who I am today.
For someone that hears all of this and you're giving them so much hope to feel better in their body, what advice do you have to offer them if they are in a place of struggle or in a place where they feel like they're never going to get here?
It has to be your choice. You have to make the choice to start loving yourself or to start to make small efforts every day to feel better. The only way that you're going to feel better is if you try to make yourself feel better. I want to challenge you to commit to choosing you and to choosing happiness for yourself, because we all deserve happiness.
We do. We totally do. Camila, you have an opportunity to offer yourself a piece of advice looking back on that hurdle moment down in Key Biscayne, finishing that run, thinking to myself, I am so tired of feeling this way. Knowing what you know now, what do you tell yourself?
I would say your struggles and how you react to your struggles are what defines you, and your individuality or the things that make you different are going to help so many in the future. Love yourself, care for yourself, and continue to celebrate your culture, because you are your superpower.
You are your superpower. I'm so happy that we're finally able to do this. For those that don't follow along with you just yet, how do they keep up with you? Give us the deets.
I'm Camila Ramon with three N's at the end. All the other ones were taken on Instagram and TikTok. That's the best place to find me. Or you can hop on the leaderboard. I teach in English and in Spanish on the bike and on the tread.
Wherever you want to go, she's there. She's ready to welcome you with open arms. I'm over at Emily Abadi at Hurdle Podcast. Another hurdle conquered. Catch you guys next time.